I'd say this one's for the listeners who happen to like beauty and makeup and also love to support companies that give back and happen to appreciate a pretty good deal. If you've been listening to my podcast for a while now, you probably know I've been a Thrive Cosmetics girlie since 2020 for many reasons. And of course, they are part of my fall glam this season. But since my routine, I'd say, is all over the place, I just have been keeping it simple. And all I feel like I need is a touch of their mascara, their liquid lash mascara, which gives me that pop, a fresh face, natural look, but also sometimes lip tint. I like their lip filler, long wearing and plumping lip liner. But there's so many things I love about Thrive Cosmetics. Like the fact that they're 100% vegan and cruelty-free, made with skin-loving, clean ingredients. They have high-performance trademarked formulas, which of course means that they have uncompromising standards. And of course, Thrive Cosmetics, spelled C-A-U-S-E, Medics. Thrive Cosmetics donates to 8 major causes, including those impacted by cancer, domestic abuse, and veteran and education organizations. I so appreciate that. But like I said, I love their Liquid Lash Extensions Mascara. I mean, it lasts all day without any clumping, smudging, or flaking. It just makes my lashes pop, and it's easy to remove. Slides right off with warm water and a washcloth. No soap required. And of course, there's nourishing ingredients supporting longer, stronger, and healthier looking lashes over time. And they have a flake-free tubing formula that is trademark, which dramatically lengthens and defines your lashes from root to tip. I've also fallen in love with their lip filler, long-wearing, and plump lip liner. It's amazing. It has a semi-permanent micropigment technology, which delivers bold, full coverage, no bleed color that lasts all day. A revitalizing lip quench technology, also trademark, which acts as a built-in lip primer to treat and smooth and then also plump, so your lips look fuller. And then that includes a built-in sharpener, so you can create a precision tip for more detailed applications. And just outline the edge of your bare lips using the precision tip and then fill it in. So brighten up your fall look with Thrive Cosmetics, luxury beauty that gives back. Right now you can get an exclusive 20% off your first order at thrivecosmetics.com/magic. That's Thrive Cosmetics, CAUSEMETICS. .com/magic for 20% off your first order, which is also in the show notes. Enjoy.
I think in a general sense, the Western world has issues around death. I think a lot of other cultures and religions and traditions have a very different relationship with death and honor it in a different way and understand that those who are crossed over are still very much with us and can work with us and talk to us all the time.
In the branch of hoodoo, that is an African, American, or indigenous of color system. It's not like a religion, but it's more of like a practice where essentially we were able to create magic and healing in the land that we were planted in. And I think that that's very powerful that we were able to come over and bring whatever knowledge and build something for healing, for food, because a lot of people transitioned over from another continent and we're in a new place, but they were able to figure out herbs to heal.
There's a lot of indigenous American practices where before even planting a seed, you place it in your mouth, and not only does it sort of soften and, depending on the seed, wake it up for germination, but it's telling the seed what you might need through your saliva and through what you might be lacking. Taking all of that in and thinking about the process, it's a reconnective journey, I think, for any Black Americans, regardless of your immediate family or otherwise, because so much has been lost and taken away.
Hello, magical friends, yummies. My name is Raquel, and welcome to Your Own Magic, a podcast for the creative and the curious soul. And today I am excited to share a truly magical conversation that dives into ancestral veneration, hoodoo, and everyday magic, and even includes intuitive recipes that invite us to connect with our roots in a powerful way. So what made this conversation even more special is that it brought together voices from across the country. I joined in from Utah with three wonderful women, Nyasha, who has been on this podcast before, Nyasha Williams. She was calling in from Colorado, and we were joined by her mother-in-love, Kenda Bell, in Baltimore. And also, I just love how they refer to each other as mother and daughter-in-love instead of in-law. Very special. And we also had the beautiful Mariah Rose from Los Angeles. And our chat spanned from magic of collaboration to the deep intuitive wisdom shared in their books and how they connect with their ancestors. A lot of ancestral, mystical, spiritual wisdom, nuggets of wisdom in this episode. And it was just such a unique experience having all three of these incredible, phenomenal women join me. I haven't had a conversation like this, and it was very unique, and it felt very divine, felt very meant for this podcast. And so I can't wait for you to listen. And so with all that being said, I believe it is time to let the magic begin with Nyasha Williams, Kenda Bell Sproul, and Mariah Rosemary. Welcome, welcome, ladies. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast. This is Nyasha's second time on the show, and she will be coming on for a third time. But right now, this is a first for me for having three beautiful women to talk to at once on screen. I've never done this before, so be patient with me and forgive me if sometimes things get a little overwhelming, but I think that we're all in a safe space, and I'm really excited. I'm really excited to connect with you all, and I'm so amazed by the Saturday magic you created. Let's recognize everyone's voices. First, Nyasha, remind us.
Yes. Hey, excited to be in this space. Thank you for having us. I'm excited to be with you talking again and just, you know, sitting in space. And yeah, I'm grateful that you found me the first time, and I'm grateful for this second connection.
Me too. And then either Mariah Rose, Kenda.
Okay, sure. Hello. My name is Mariah Rose. Thank you, Nyasha, for having me on, and Raquel for having all of us on. I'm the author, Cook Like Your Ancestors, and illustrator.
Ah, impressive. So my name is Kenda Bell Sproul, and I'm also known as the Joy Factor Mama. And along with a host of other things that I do, I'm like overjoyed that I was able to co-author this children's book with my daughter in love. This is my first children's book. I've done other books, but this was an exciting journey.
I love that you refer to each other as daughter and mother in love. That's the way it should be.
Mm-hmm. And you have to give it, you have to say it to make it so.
Oh, that's so beautiful. Now, this is the first question I ask all the Euro Magic guests. What is lighting you up most in this season of your life? And Nyasha, since you set this all up, I will put you in the hot seat.
Yeah. So I'm an author. That's where like a lot of my creativity has been living. But recently I have been hearing the call to get into more tangible creating and get into physical crafting. And I have been loving that. So I have been creating my own spiritual oils, which has been so beautiful to like sit with the plants and work with them. And then I have been loving embroidery. I have been walking into working with embroidery, and I have so many visions and what that can be and what is going to be developed from all of that. But it's just been so fun to do physical crafting because I do a lot of stuff on my computer and writing. And so this has just been cool to expand where my creativity is living in this season.
You are always creating. You are always creating. It's inspiring. And then Mariah Rose.
I love that. I love the tangible and the plant work. I'm in a similar space. I feel like, you know, as the world goes wild, you have to ground yourself in soil, just get in there. So I have some cucumbers. I could actually pull one from off screen. My plant is going absolutely wild. These guys are like 2 feet long.
Wow.
So that's amazing.
We
have eggplants. We have 3 different kinds of chilies coming. And I've also enrolled in a 50-hour herbalism class that I'm starting today.
Today?
Congrats. Yes. That's awesome. That's amazing. Congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you.
I love that. And Kenda Bell.
Oh, wow. I am in a more airy way of really looking at what I have like accomplished this past year, and I'm in gratitude, and I'm kind of sitting down trying to figure out what my next goals are and different types of projects that I want to do, and opening up to a in-person tribe with women that we're growing, because I had spent so much time in a digital woman's tribe, and it's very like empowering to be in the midst of women being powerful and spiritual, and everyone's at their own stages, but it's not like a hierarchy. Everyone's teaching. So that's what I'm excited about. I am.
That's amazing. So are you finding a community in Baltimore?
Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. So we're all in different places right now. I'm in Park City, Utah. Nyasha's in a place between Boulder and Denver in Colorado. Mm-hmm. Mariah Rose is in LA. Do you mind if I say that? That I'm doxing where you guys are?
No. I'm fine.
And then Kenda Bell is in Baltimore. So we're all over the map right now.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome.
It is. It's so cool. And yet you three collaborated on this together, all in different areas. Obviously, the daughter and mother in love know each other quite well, but Mariah Rose is someone that they are just getting to know and collaborate with. So what inspired this creation of Saturday Magic, and how did you all decide to collaborate?
Yeah, so I just feel like Saturday Magic has so many different elements to the book, and there's so many ways to connect with different people. I feel like we can connect with like the hoodoo community, obviously. I feel like the book brings about ancestral veneration, so anyone doing that kind of practice. The book brings about, you know, people who are looking for just a different way that people are connecting in family with, in terms of like spiritual gifts, like letting kids to kind of take the rein on that. So there's like so many different ways to connect with the book. Also people who, again, and this is where Mariah Rose comes in, is looking at cooking with your ancestors and what that looks like. So having these ancestral recipes come through you. And so I have been trying to connect with so many different people through the book, and Mariah Rose came up on radar through Cook Like Your Ancestors, their beautiful book. I just was like, it caught my eye, and I was like, oh my goodness, this is amazing. We have to connect. And so I reached out and I was like, would you be interested in a conversation around ancestral cooking, ancestral knowledge around food, just sitting in space and having conversation about that? And I didn't ask your pronouns, so I will use they for right now, but they were absolutely on board and stepped in. And I'm just excited to be in conversation now, because if you haven't seen that book, please go buy it. It's so beautiful. And I didn't know you were the illustrator, so I'm like even more in awe, because those illustrations are stunning. The color palette is beautiful. I'm just like obsessed. So yes.
Mm-hmm. Thank you so much. Yeah, it was an honor to see the copy and have it in my hands too, Saturday Magic, to exactly see what you were seeing in that. It's always... It's so humbling to know that there's so many other people kind of working in this space to try to get people to reconnect without shame, without any intimidation. It's like do what feels right, as long as it's, you know, feeling good to you.
I never thought about doing a children's book. So when she came to me like about it and was talking about cooking, I was like, well, okay, I'm not a chef, I'm not a trained chef. But when she started telling me the concept, and then we got together and really wove the story about food and ancestry and family, I realized that there's so much history in cooking for cultures, for all cultures. And most of them are passed down either by the recipe or by the tongue, meaning your taste. You might not have been raised in a certain way to cook a certain thing, but you may have a taste for curry. And you're like, why are you like, oh, well, come to find out, you know, so everything goes back to where you come from. And it was very healing to include the ancestors and children, the whole family experience with cooking and enjoying. And ancestor honoring to me is very important.
Yes. And I was going to say, we were really happy that the publisher allowed us to put a recipe in that didn't have like really strict measurements. And we wrote about that in the recipe. We said, the recipe doesn't have that because you're supposed to just kind of feel out when you need to stop or, you know, allow yourself to tap into that intuition, that ancestral bone in relation to cooking. And so we really wanted to give people that space. So everyone's salad that we have in the book is going to look a little different mm-hmm. because they're going to be listening to themselves mm-hmm. and their ancestors in that creation.
So that's where the intuitive cooking comes from. That's brilliant. I feel like a lot of us cook like that anyway.
Yeah, of course yeah. we do. Yeah, we don't follow recipes. We rarely read boxes on how to even put things together. We might little salt. We don't really yeah. know if that's a true teaspoon.
I'm not going to grab a teaspoon of salt for my salt. No, I'm just going to put it in.
Okay, I find this fascinating. So learning a new language, you likely know, can sharpen your memory and boost your problem-solving skills, but also it can even delay the onset of dementia. So after hearing that, sign me up. And I believe the perfect way to do it is through Rosetta Stone. Yep, the OG of language learning. It's trusted by millions and has been around for 30 years. So, you know, they definitely have got it down. And what's cool is that it's available on both desktop and an app, so I can literally take it anywhere. And as someone who's lived abroad in different places, I gotta say that having a tool like Rosetta Stone is a must. Plus, it's always fun brushing up on my Japanese before I visit my niece and nephew. Here's the thing, Rosetta Stone offers 25 different languages. So yes, they've got Japanese for me, but also Spanish, French, Italian, German, Korean, Chinese, Dutch, Arabic, Polish, you name it. And they're known for their fast language acquisition. Rosetta Stone immerses you completely, no English translations, so you can actually learn to think in that language. First, you start with the words, then phrases, and before you know it, you're having full-on conversations, all designed for long-term retention too. Oh, and the best part, I must say, is the speech recognition feature, True Accent. It's like having a personal trainer for your accent. So if you're like me and need to make sure that you're not butchering your words, True Accent's got your back. And what's even better is you can learn anytime, anywhere, on the go with the app, or if you're chilling at your desk, it's your schedule. And here's the real kicker. Rosetta Stone is offering a lifetime membership with access to all 25 languages at 50% off. If that is not a steal, I don't know what it is. I mean, a lifetime membership. You're covered for every future trip or language need in your life, for life. Don't put off learning that language. There's no better time than right now to get started. Your Own Magic listeners can get Rosetta Stone's lifetime membership for 50% off. Visit rosettastone.com/today. That's 50% off, unlimited access to 25 language courses for the rest of your life. Redeem your 50% off at rosettastone.com/today. I really think you're going to love and, of course, benefit from hormone harmony, especially the girlies listening right now who feel the need to find something science-backed yet nature-inspired, because hormone harmony uses adaptogens to support our vessels for that time of the month, which is why I appreciate Hormone Harmony, a feminine phenomenon. Hormone Harmony contains science-backed herbal extracts called adaptogens. And here's the beauty about adaptogens. They happen to help the body adapt to any stressors, like chaotic hormonal changes that happen naturally throughout a woman's life. And like I said, it's not just for menopause. It's truly for any woman with symptoms of hormonal imbalances. And it's perfect for symptoms like racing thoughts and low mood, moods, hot flashes and night sweats, poor sleep and feeling tired all the time, occasional bloating and gas, or even no desire to be in bed next to someone, if you know what I mean. So yeah, Hormone Harmony can help with all these things. And Happy Mammoth, the company that created Hormone Harmony, is dedicated to making women's lives easier. It has zero sugar and is gluten-free, dairy-free, non-GMO, and third-party tested. So for a limited time, you can get 15% off your entire first order at happymammoth.com. Just use the code MAGIC at checkout. That's happymammoth.com and use the code MAGIC for 15% off today. This is also in the show notes.
What was everyone's process like in this creation?
Can I jump in and say?
Yes, Kendabell, please.
Niasha was the taskmaster for sure. And I love her for it. She kept us on track, but not on track in terms of like, we got to get it done, but on track in terms of not just writing a book, but creating a story that can breathe on its own and have you to add to it. You know, we're not just going to close the book afterwards. Everyone that has read the book has contacted me. Not because my phone would be overwhelmed, but people that I know have contacted me and expressed how this children's book or this picture book has enlivened them and inspired them. I mean, I just got like a message a couple of days ago.
I'll say it was really lovely working with my mother in law because we always say it, we're from different generations, yeah. Right? So we have this back and forth in that. I will also say that I didn't grow up in hoodoo practice or hoodoo traditions, right? And so my mother-in-law has really been an opening in that way. I kind of stepped into ancestor veneration, and I think ancestor veneration and hoodoo go hand in hand. And so my mother-in-law's really supported me on my hoodoo journey and kind of stepping into those practices. And I, you know, it's been a learning curve for me. I'm a transracial adoptee, so my parents are white, all my siblings and I are Black. So there's been a lot of like working to reclaim and coming back to myself and my identity, which is a lot of my writing sits with that and sits in that space, especially my tarot deck, my oracle deck, you know, all of those pieces are me doing reclaiming work and stepping back into spiritual practices that feel aligned to me. And so the book is really my mother-in-law and I kind of showing how we've stepped back and reclaimed and allowing Deo's family to kind of showcase the ways that we've reclaimed and the ways that we are working with our ancestors and stepping back into those practices and building those connections and just showing how that can look like in every, what that looks like in everyday living, you know?
That's so exciting. This is for anyone, right? Anyone who wants to get in touch with their ancestral side. And you talk about hoodoo and ancestral veneration. Do you mind elaborating for those who might not be familiar on what those are?
Sure. So ancestral veneration to me is building a connection and a relationship with your ancestors. I think that, you know, one of the big things I think that like shifted that there's multiple things. I think in a general sense, the Western world has issues around death. I think a lot of other cultures and religions and traditions have a very different relationship with death and honor it in a different way and understand that those who are crossed over are still very much with us and can work with us and talk to us all the time. And so that relationship just looks very different. In, you know, a lot of Western traditions, there's a lot of fear. Colonization has a lot of fear around death. And they just made it like relationships with those of crossover kind of scary. And I think there's this we're trying to honor a new way of looking at it because a lot of people practice ancestral veneration without realizing it. And I say this because people have altars in their home all the time. If you have your grandpa's old watch, if you have grandma's cookbook that has been passed down, those are technically altars that are carrying forth that you are keeping with you in those heirlooms. You know, I think there's beautiful ways that people are venerating now their ancestors. And I just love sitting in that space because there's just so many magical ways people are sitting and honoring their ancestors, whether they're conscious of it or not. So to me, ancestral veneration is just like making space and room in your life for communication with your ancestors and building that relationship and keeping that connection alive and honoring that, because I think they have your best interests at heart, and just keeping those relations strong and, you know, continuing to build the relationship after they've crossed over.
In the branch of hoodoo, that is an African American or indigenous of color system. It's not like a religion, but it's more of like a practice where essentially we were able to create magic and healing in the land that we were planted in. And I think that that's very powerful, that we were able to come over and bring whatever knowledge and build something for healing, for food, because a lot of people transitioned over from another continent and we're in a new place, but they were able to figure out herbs to heal. Hoodoo is not necessarily about harming or hindering anyone. You can use any system, Christianity, any of the big three, to harm people. So when we talk about hoodoo, it's really about healing, and it's also for people of color were able to create their own while they were systematically trafficked. So, you know, and I'll get more. I see her raising her hand, but it's food, it's healing, it's everything, it's lifestyle, it's the scriptures in the Bible, it's taking the earth from a place and knowing the place is blessed and bringing it back home and planting your plant in it, just things like that.
Yeah, I wanted to hop in because I just realized something while you guys are saying this, which is how it is also intuitive that that you go about these practices in unconscious ways and ways that your body and your people remember, and that's in you, however you choose to venerate. Mm-hmm. And so many parallels with that and cooking. I wanted to say too that I feel like however much of a particular ingredient someone needs to put in and wants to put in is precisely what the body is needing and asking for as well. There's a lot of Indigenous American practices where before even planting a seed, you place it in your mouth. And not only does it sort of soften and, depending on the seed, wake it up for germination, but it's telling the seed what you might need through your saliva and through what you might be lacking. And taking all of that in and thinking about the process, it's a reconnective journey, I think, for any Black Americans, regardless of your immediate family or otherwise, because so much has been lost and taken away. And during the release party of this book, there was someone who approached me who was saying that that their grandparents had passed on. If I were to guess, I would say that that they were East African. And this person who came in off the street, because it looked like a little party, we were just both holding each other in tears, because she was like, I feel like this has given me permission to go back and try these things that my grandparents taught. I didn't even think that it was something that I could do. My parents didn't teach me this. They didn't want to teach me anything. They wanted me to integrate and assimilate. And this has given me a little entryway. So I love the overarching things of removing the walls and just listening to the self.
So beautiful. I loved hearing about the seed. I've never heard that before. So I'm like, oh my gosh, that's powerful. And I love learning about everyone else's, you know, ways of being, because I just think that the more we learn of our traditional roots, I feel like it just brings us back to the land and reconnects us, which is what we need right now. I will say the other thing about hoodoo is that when we were enslaved, when we were brought over, we were not allowed to practice our traditional like practices, right? So not only do you have all these different tribes being mixed together through enslavement, but we were not allowed to practice our traditional practices, our religious practices, and we were forced into Christianity. Christianity was, like, enslavers were told, you need to turn your slaves Christian or it's death. So, you know, that is the origins for a lot of us of why we stepped into Christianity. And thankfully, we're a very, very powerful people. We're very, very, you know, I think our wisdom is so evident in the ways that we move. And so a lot of us were hiding our spiritual practice. We say hidden in plain sight. So that's where you will still see people who are in the church. They will do things that we correlate as hoodoo movements or hoodoo, part of the hoodoo rituals or hoodoo practices or part of our ancestral veneration. And you will see it in spaces, but they weren't allowed to describe it in those ways, and, you know, for safety, for the assimilation. And so these things are still very evident and very there, but it was hidden in plain sight because we were not allowed to move the ways we were allowed, like the ways that we would have liked to have moved, or in our traditional ways that we are trying now to reclaim.
We always talk about this with Christianity, me and my daughter in love. And the thing is that when we talk about the different faiths and stuff, if you look at any of the faiths, the big five or the big six or whatever, they all seem to have the same message, but everyone just has their own version of it. And when we talk about hoodoo, they use the scriptures for healing, protection, and all of that stuff. And when you go to a Black church, certain churches, like the more of the holiness churches, you'll see the prayer warriors, call and response, the circle. Those are things that are indigenous practices that are found in many cultures from Europe, Asia, the Americas, and Africa. And so it saddens me because I know my generation, some of us still studied the African traditions, but we did it more of study as opposed to practice. I know I was one of them. I studied it, but I wasn't really into the practice. But other cultures are not made to feel guilty to practice their faith. And it's not about our faith, but more of culture. And I hope that people can see the difference in between the faith part and the cultural part.
Wow, you guys all shared some very powerful things. I think it's beautiful to relay these messages. I mean, how beautiful is it that you're able to relay these messages to everyone, even children, in a way that makes it fun for them? You and I both know that what we put on our skin matters, but have you ever thought about how you apply it might be even more important and effective? Since 2019, Anissa Beauty has been shaking up the beauty world with their vegan, cruelty-free brushes that are as good for your skin as they are for the planet. Founded by Anissa Telwar-Kiker, who brings over 30 years of beauty industry know-how, this brand is all about pushing boundaries with innovative, high quality brushes that make your routine feel luxe. Their Pinnacle Foundation Brush has gone viral for a good reason. It's a must-have for beauty lovers everywhere. What makes Anissa Beauty stand out is that they've completely changed the game by designing skincare brushes that pair perfectly with your moisturizers, serums, and cleansers. They're one of the few brands that truly understand that how you apply your products can make all the difference, helping your skin soak up every drop of goodness. Ooh, and let's talk about the Pinnacle Foundation Brush. As someone who is a skin care lover, I'd say that this one is a game changer for me. I mean, this brush is the gateway to realizing that the tool you use can be even more important than the product itself. And it doesn't matter what the foundation is. I gotta say that this brush makes it look like I'm rocking some sort of $200 high-end formula. And the finish
is flawless. And it's not just for foundation either. Thanks to its unique triangular shape, it fits perfectly into every nook and cranny on your face. So whether it's foundation, contour, or highlighter, this brush does it all with precision. And Anissa's skincare brushes prove that you don't even have to use your hands anymore, because Pinnacle Skin Brush does all the heavy lifting, applying everything from your serums to moisturizers evenly and effortlessly. And these brushes aren't just tools, they're the secret to elevating your entire beauty routine. And Anissa has a very special offer for you. Check out the Pinnacle Foundation Brush as well as several other amazing brushes at anissabeauty.com and get 30% off site-wide with code MAGIC. That's A-N-I-S-A beauty.com for 30% off site-wide with code MAGIC.
Did you know that in Ohio, the state Supreme Court could just ignore the reproductive rights amendment we passed last year?
But so many Ohioans voted for it.
That's why we need to keep extremists out of the court by voting for Justices Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
I don't know if I can remember that.
Here's the trick. Just remember, don't stop fighting. DSF. Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes. If you supported Issue 1 last year, don't stop fighting. Vote for Donnelly, Stewart, and Forbes.
This message was paid for by Red, Wine, and Blue.
So the illustrator, Mariah Rose, I'm curious about your illustration process.
Oh, yes. Yeah, to speak on the process, this was actually my first book, which is why, Nyasha, I'm so impressed with all of your books look so good and would be exactly what I would want to read, all the babies. So this was my first book. It was very new. I can't state too much on what my process is like outside of my sort of base work in comics and illustration. I have a background in animation, so I might have like done some storyboards for some kids shows that your kids might have watched. But to translate that to this very collaborative, global sort of book was a trip. It started with the writing, absolutely. I just need that as a structure. And I actually put out an open call to people online, to all my friends and family, to say, here's this book I'm working on, here's the concept. If you have any recipes that you think might be a fit, please send them to me. And so I received recipes in the form of WhatsApp messages, scraps of paper with like 3 ingredients on it, and are like, just figure it out. And, you know, and then very detailed ones. So it took a lot of cross-cultural sort of research, taking from contributors and their relationship to that recipe and the way that their particular family might do it a certain way versus the sort of Wikipedia or academic or, you know, I'm a chef out of India and this is how I do it sort of research I was doing. So I tried to integrate in every recipe some textiles, some like earthenware or silver, certain things that are particular to the country where the recipe came from. And I let that dictate the colors and all these things. It honestly felt very unplanned. So to hear that everything feels cohesive it's really heartening. And I think that that's just what food feels like. It's just like a warm, nutritional sort of palette.
Yeah. Oh, lovely. I love that. And Kenda, Belle, and Nyasha, so you co-authored this together. What was that like collaborating and having to message back and forth? I know Nyasha's so good at being on top of it.
She was on top of it from beginning to end, but it was also good because we also got to bond too, because you guys been married for how long now?
It will be 8, I think.
Sorry. Yeah. Yeah. So this was, number one, a great way for us to bond. And so I already know how brilliant she is. I've already seen the work that she's done. So for her to even ask me to do it, and we went back and forth, we would edit this, we would change that. Well, no. And one of the things that I'm thinking about now is that I thought at first that Dio was a little sassy. She was a little sassy. But again, this is where, when she said earlier, the age gap. I'm Gen X. She's like a millennial. So I might have been a little more like, children don't say certain things. But of course, now I'm older. I understand that children need to express themselves more. So I really like the way I was learning how my grandkids are going to be.
I like that.
Yeah, it was really fun. Great. And yeah, I think like language, we definitely went back and forth on like how to say certain things. Cause like, I feel like that sounds a little like old school. It's like, you know, so we'd be going back and forth on that. So it's like finding this middle ground. I love co-authoring because, again, we all have different lenses. We all have different gazes. And I feel like when you work with other people in that way, you expand and your lenses and gazes are able to expand. And so I love co-authoring with people because it allows me to grow. It adds these different levels of richness to your work because, you know, you're able to see things that you may not have seen if you were alone and creating alone. So that definitely is, I have quite a few co-authored projects and it just always, it's just beautiful to work with people in that way.
That's amazing. And you make it happen. That's what's awesome. You know that this person is likely full of creative ideas. You reach out to them, you make it happen. You actually execute it. And now you're holding the book in your hands. That must be such a great feeling to actually have something out there. Because we're always full of ideas, but not, we don't always execute them. But you always, I mean, look at all the books behind you, Niasha. You make it happen. And that's one thing I just really admire about you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Yeah, and I try and support people in that. I feel like I love co-authoring too because it's like this like built-in accountability in terms of getting stuff done and staying on top of things. But I am trying to build those spaces on Sundays. Now I offer just a Zoom space, well, not Zoom, Google Meet, from 9 to 12 every single Sunday where people can come in and work on whatever they need to work on so that they have that space. So we don't talk. It's like 50 minutes of work, silent work time, and then 10 minutes talk, and then 50 minutes of silent work time, 10 minutes talk, 50 minutes of silent work time, 10 minutes talks, just so that people can have that space, that accountability without talking to get whatever they're trying to get on, work on, and get out into the world, you know, that space to work on it.
That's brilliant. That truly is brilliant. 9 to 12, what time zone?
So 9 to 12 MST. So yeah, people hop on, people hop off. It's like, you know, my sister and I run it together. My sister, this is my second younger sister. So she lives in South Africa. She co-authored the Oracle Den with me. So you will meet her soon, Raquel. But yes, I was like, she and I kind of host the space and it's just, yeah. People pop on as they're able to, and sometimes they can't make every week, but we just try and hold that space for people to work on projects as needed.
Very cool. Now I would like to ask some questions on reader engagement and advice for your readers. How would you recommend readers use this book?
I'll definitely say that it's sort of in the subtitle, I guess. Cook Like Your Ancestors is sort of half a cookbook. It's definitely just meant to inspire. It's meant to get you to think about preparing food differently, and is totally up to interpretation. There's plenty of cooking techniques that I think us in the West, definitely me, I was unfamiliar with, that people made me aware of. So hopefully it's just a jumping point for people to get more creative and, again, sort of take off the intimidation of it all.
Yeah, so I was going to say, I have Mariah's book here. And Mariah Rose's book here. And I was gonna say that when I was reading the beginning, I learned so much, like just even the pan, like I didn't know you could fix like a cast iron. So like even just hearing that was just so powerful. I was like, oh my gosh, so helpful.
I'm gonna spank you.
Like, that's so helpful.
It makes the best cornbread.
Yes, I saw that. I was like, oh, because we actually have a cast iron.
It's vital.
Yes. So I didn't know that you could fix it if something went wrong. So I was like, this is a beautiful like thing to know. And then, you know, just like the different ways of measuring are so great because, you know, you hear about that all the time. And you see it and we have these discussions of like what that looks like. I know my mother in love, she gets lots of downloads from her ancestors in terms of recipes, whether they're food to eat or edible or not. Sometimes they're like, you know, spiritual creations that need to come forth, but then other times they are recipes that need to be to come forth as well. And then we're often talking about how, like, when you have cravings for things that, like, you're like, I don't really want to eat that, but I have this craving, that's generally your ancestors asking for it on the altar. They want it. And so generally you prepare it to make sure to give them that space. Another thing that in our traditions and often in hoodoo is like, if you drop food on the ground when you're cooking, your ancestors are like, make me a plate. Like, they're asking for some, make sure to leave them some. When I always say ancestors eat first in my house. So like, especially on holidays, if I'm making like a big anything, like lots of food, I always like to make sure I make a plate for my ancestors first and allow them to eat, put it on the altar for them. Just because I want to honor and thank them for the ways that they move. And like, again, in my journal of my tarot deck, I talk about how many ancestors it took for us to be here now. And it's really insane when you do that ancestral math. So I like to sit in that space and in that gratitude and that honoring. And so always trying to make space for that. I don't know all of my ancestors, like my ancestors very mixed on my wall over here. Obviously there's ancestors that I do know that are up there that are like of my adopted family, but like my birth family, I don't know those ancestors. Like I'm in connection with my maternal birth family, but I don't know a lot of those ancestors that I have been given photos of. And then I have in love family up there as well. And, you know, it's just been interesting to feel out their energy and get to know them as I've been working with them and through the cards and through different divinational tools. But as I do learn about people, like talking to my mother in love and learning like what my, you know, great, great grandmother really liked food wise. I know she likes like coconut cake. So I try and like make space to put that on the altar for her. And so just like learning as you go in those ways and making space. In terms of Saturday magic, we wanted to showcase ways that we're stepping back and we hope people see that because everyone has their own traditional practices and ways of being. But we're hoping that people will also share and think about what they do at home, how they're honoring their ancestors, how they're stepping into those spiritual practices. And like I said, there's so many beautiful ways people are venerating now. And I just like hope that continues to grow and people continue to share the ways that they're venerating.
Yes. So what one of the things that I want people to take away is be in flow. Her journey was all about flow. Intuition. It was like trusting the process of things, asking questions, not out of fear, but out of for clarity. I guess that's what I'm trying to say. Because when we look at her, she's having a day, she's getting up, she's getting surprises. She's already in tune with, she knows the ancestors are telling her something based on her dreams. And this is something that, again, all cultures have a certain thing about dreams. And I don't want to go off into current events. I'll just stay where I am. But basically, we need to start trusting ourselves much more than the things outside of us. And our ancestors can be good barometers. Now, there are some elevated ancestors, and there's some not so elevated ancestors. So when we take all of that in mind, we understand that those ancestors need healing. So when we're offering them food on the altar or so have you, or we're burning them money or doing different things, we're not necessarily asking them for help, but we're understanding that their life may have been a challenge where they can't help, but we are healing the attributes that may have caused the pain that may still be in the DNA. You understand? Because everything that we do, even if we talk about the veneration part, and it's still where the DNA, it's the food that we eat, the DNA. So when I want some okra salad, and I don't really eat okra. I know that's an ancestor that wants the okra, and also that my body may need more iron. It's again the DNA. So the ancestors are letting me know you might want to eat some more okra because it has iron in it. Your iron is getting low. You know, so it's the DNA, the ancestors, it's all in how you look at it. So we want people to see magic in their day.
It's really interesting because one story I want to bring up quickly is recently on TikTok, there was a video of a young Black woman who was in a car. She was visiting some friends who lived in the South. She's not from the South. And they were going by a cotton field. And she kind of said she wanted to go and touch the cotton. And, you know, there was the friend was white, and the friend's like, why would you do that? That's like taking your ancestors a million, like, years back. Why would you do that? And kind of like going off on her. And I think on surface, I think people can understand where the white girl was coming from. But my thing is, in this aspect of reclaiming, it's powerful for us to sit with plants that our ancestors are connected to, and to sit with the land that our ancestors were connected to. And so I feel like, you know, there was probably something ancestral in her that wanted to sit with this plant that her ancestors worked, her ancestors had bonded with and had a relationship with. And so, and again, there are people now who work cotton. There are Black people in this country who still work with cotton. And I think that's powerful in them doing it in their own way, in doing it of their own volition, you know, just like moving with it in a way that feels correct to them. That's important. So this very, very powerful healing work. But I think, again, they were very young. They were like young Gen Zs. I feel like it was, I think there was a lot happening in the video. But I just sit with that video a lot because I think about how, you know, some of our relationships have been, we've had harm. I think about the Black community, particularly with the elements. There's a lot of elements that have been forced. We've had forced harm against us. We've been forced harm through water. We've been forced harm with fire. We've been forced harm with metal. We've been forced harm with a lot of different elements. And I feel like this is where I sit in space, especially with water, because water is so important to me and it's literally life and we need it. So we need to heal our relationship with that element. And so I feel like whether it's plants, whether it's elements, there's a space for us needing to step back into that and heal from that. I know when we do ancestor work, we're talking about connecting with our ancestors and how that works. There's this deep space of white people being like, well, you know, I don't know if I want to connect with my ancestors. There's this discomfortability with that. And it's this space of like, well, first of all, I think that most ancestors, there's something that they've done that can be helpful. So don't throw the baby out with the bathwater. It's like, I have an ancestor who might have been very problematic in certain ways. Maybe they weren't great with relationships, but then when it comes to this specific, like maybe their finances, they were great with. Then I will turn to them for finances, but not necessarily turn to them when it comes to relationship advice. And when it comes to white people, I always say, we're all indigenous if we go back far enough. So I say, you need to go back to who were you before you were white? Like, who was that? So who and what religious practices were they practicing? What were they eating? How were they living? You need to go back so that you can find those roots and learn and step back into your ancestral movements before you got the label of being white. And like I said, like, there's lots of different ancestors. I always speak to ancestors who are in alignment with me and my highest good. So ancestors who are in alignment with what I'm trying to do, living out my soul mission, working towards liberation for all. If ancestors are down to do that, whether they're my blood or not, let's go. Let's vibe. Let's work together. And that's the vibe for me.
For me, the rituals are every day. You know, I do have an ancestors table where there's some pictures, et cetera. And if I cook something, I'll give them a plate. I give them coffee. On days when, you know, I don't cook or I don't feel like, you know, cooking or whatever, I may give them some coffee. I try to, at the very least, give them coffee, you know, just to say, hey, I know you're there, fresh water. But for me, mine is more so trying to heal my trauma, That's my ancestor work of identifying the patterns that have been carried down from generation to generation to generation that I'm pushing forth. Learning that eating healthier is not a phase, but this is something that my ancestors actually did eat fruits and vegetables and not processed food. It's also me making peace with the things that as a culture we may have been like ashamed of, like watermelon. Watermelon is the centerpiece of the recipe. And this was a symbol of things that were quote unquote shamed, but watermelons actually were one of the things that helped freed trafficked people. I don't like saying slave, so forgive me if that word triggers you, but that's how I see it. We're able to sell watermelons to make money, you know? So there's different aspects of the veneration that are not so, I think, spooky. The rituals that people do every day are, people do the rituals of brushing their teeth, I hope, every day and taking a bath. There's rituals, there's spiritual things that you also do to keep your space together and your mind together. And to me, that is hoodoo. That's connecting with my ancestors. And I will definitely ask for the enlightened ancestors to come forth. And they give me downloads for recipes and spiritual baths all the time. And I love it.
That's amazing. When you give them coffee, are you leaving them the coffee, or are you sipping the coffee and they are there infusing it like when you crave okra?
That is their coffee. I bake it.
That's their coffee.
That's their coffee. No sugar, just black.
Well, and I was gonna say, I have like plates and silverware that's just for them. Like I have plates and cups that are like, that's theirs. Even if you're just going to the Dollar Tree and buying their set, buy that for them. That is theirs. And you know, it's beautiful if you can make them. Like I know some people do pottery classes. If you can make the cups, that's just like another level of beauty, like level of yes. So, you know, I think they show what they want and things. But when it comes to food, you don't have to give a huge plate. I do sometimes like on big holidays, but it can just be a small amount of whatever you're eating that you make a little bowl for them and you set it out for them, ready for them. And you don't let anything rot or mold on your altar. You release it. People always want to know where it goes. If it is something that can go back to the earth, give it back to the earth, you know, when it's done, compost it. I like to, I don't drink coffee, but if I do buy coffee for the altar, I try and buy multiple kinds. Like I try and do a plain black coffee. I try and do one with milk. I try and do one with sugar because I don't know what they like and everyone likes different things. I know that I wouldn't even drink coffee. So I try and like give a variety because you just don't know what people are going to want. And so I try and mix it up in relation to that. I try and give like a white wine and a red wine because some sweet, some not sweet because you just don't know, you know? And so I try and like be open in that way. Yeah.
I was just so struck by what you said, Niasha. Go back far enough before you were white in the same way that every people gets to do that. But I think it's not as stark and apparent as it is in the US because black folks have to do the same thing. We got to go far enough so that we weren't black. And oftentimes it's just impossible to find the people in the exact lineage that you came from on paper and say, you know, she left at this year at this time. And not everyone gets to have the Alex Haley root sort of story. But there was a practice, and I wanted to bring that up, that a really amazing writer based out of Minneapolis, Wanata, I went to like a little retreat. She had everybody sit down and say, find your ancestor. It does not need to be someone related to you. Who is your, specifically it was a queer farmer's retreat, and like, who is your queer ancestor? And so people were like, ooh, you know, James Baldwin, Audre Lorde, you're not related to these people, but you're trying to live in their shoes. Yes. You're trying to live in their way. And they so clearly set a path, a really, really noble, honorable path that we could follow. And I, of course, like broke down immediately. But it was enlightening to hear that because, yeah, some of my ancestors are not great either. But the more that I, dig without going too into detail, the more I see on all sides that white side, indigenous side, black side, all of them were working with the earth. Farmers all the way, forced or otherwise. And I think I find a lot of healing in knowing that black folk who were enslaved were not necessarily, it wasn't a joyless thing to work the earth. It was so necessary to actually go out of your way to supplement the very lacking diet that they were fed. So hunting, foraging, getting to know what was healing you on the side. I look at the Caribbean and those herbal traditions, and it gets even deeper and a little bit richer in the sense that that land so gives so much, and it's amazing to see people bring that in. And I'm just working with all of that too. I guess plants are kind of my way through. I have an altar. I sometimes leave things at it, but it's something that I feel like a little intimidated by, to be honest. And that's why I love Saturday Magic so much. I was like, let me just lean into these things that I've been doing. So yeah, thank you for that.
Absolutely. I love that. And even when you were talking about the foraging and the hunting and how we had to supplement, I was like, that in itself, to me, that's the origins of soul food. Like, I think soul food, people think it's like, oh, the macaroni and cheese and all this and this, but the origins, like, and this is the roots, because I think people say, oh, soul food's so bad for you and it's just so unhealthy, but that was the origins of soul food. It was like the Gullah Geechee, like, eating from the earth, from the land, and like seasonal and what is there. And so I like really am trying to shift people's mind around soul food and what it looks like. I think if you have not watched it, I'm going to scream it from the rooftop. High on the Hog is phenomenal. I cry every single episode because it's just so beautiful. But it just shows how powerful and how deep we are as a people in relation to building the food culture of this country as Black people. And so it just shows how we evolved this country's food systems and food ways. And so I just, you know, I always think of like the line that always gets me in that show is when they say like, you know, Martha Washington has tons of recipe books, and I'm like, she was not cooking them. Like, who was in the kitchen making that food, you know? And so sitting with all of that, and there's just so many powerful stories and people they bring up in every single one of those episodes that I just, I sit in so much awe of, like, again, those ancestors. When I'm cooking, I feel like I'm calling upon them. When I'm writing, I feel like I'm calling upon ancestors who didn't have space to write, weren't able to want to tell these stories that I'm telling now. And so you do work far beyond your bloodline. And I think, you know, you just want to call in people who are in alignment with whatever you feel called to do here and what is your soul mission down here.
I just wanted to share really quickly, don't be afraid of your ancestors. They are you. We are all one. You are one with them. And they're not over you. They're a part of you. And you're a part of them. So they don't have any power over you. You know, you can give it to them if you want, but it's not, but anyway, so I wanted to share that. And the next thing that I wanted to talk about was the idea. I forgot, Nyasha, you said something and I wanted to jump on. We've been sharing so much and I'm like, oh, I want to say that. And then, oh, I want to talk of that. But I guess that was what Spirit wanted me to just share. So I'll leave it for there. And if it comes back, I will unmute myself.
Well, thank you, Kenda Bell. That was so, every message you all just shared really was so powerful, and it meant so much to myself and I'm sure a lot of the listeners. This is not just any old children's book or recipe book. I mean, it's in the name, Magic, Saturday Magic. And I'm very grateful that you are honoring of intuitive practices as well, because I feel like a lot of us could use more of a push to honor that side of ourselves, because we all have that. And I'm excited to read all the recipes and read the story. Is there anything else before I ask the very last question I ask all your magic guests you guys want to chat about?
There is so much, and I've been pulling down, like, what was I going to say? Because I feel like it was great, but I'm not going to belabor it. I can't pull it down right now.
Okay. I understand. I've been there. Well, this is the last question that I ask all the Your Magic guests, and maybe in this question, it will come back to you, Kenda Bell. How would you advise the Your Own Magic listeners to create their own magic?
I think the big message here is to feel it out. I think shame has such a chokehold on people. And I mean, every type of people. There's so many people that have been removed from what so many people inherit naturally through displacement, through colonization, through trafficking, through immigration and unstable home countries. And we kind of go through this cultural meat grinder to try to fit this sort of normal, where in reality, this normal doesn't exist. And the sooner you can shed that shame and do whatever work you need to do to tap into something that would, dare I say, make your ancestors proud, that's your own magic right there. That's alchemy. So I think that's the biggest takeaway for me.
Can I just say that shame and blame is the biggest spell cast that is utilized by society and every space? That's like the biggest juju that we put on ourselves. And as a result, since we put it on ourselves, you put on yourself, I put it on myself, she puts on herself, put on herself. And then everyone is in this shame. And then it's like, that's the worst juju, that we're all very powerful. And I would say, give yourself the opportunity to trust yourself in small increments. That's a great way to start. Like, take a different route to work. Decide to go to that party and see if the magic is that you meet someone that has the perfect contact for your next project. You understand? That's how it works. Like, rather than thinking maybe it's something that's keeping me back, maybe it's something that's anxious about moving to the next level. So give yourself opportunity to trust your intuition in small increments, the small increments, and it will eventually build that muscle where you'll be creating magic and without even really knowing it.
Mariah Rose, when you brought up that like cultural meat grind, I was like, whew, that is something, because yeah, I can see that visually and I'm like, yikes. You know, both of you, when you were talking, made me think of like colonization, the steps of colonization, the steps of decolonization. If you don't know those, a really good person to look up is Pokuluane, is a Hawaiian activist who talks about the steps of colonization and the steps of decolonization. And I sit with that often in terms of that. And yes, like, they did a lot of work to get us to where we are right now, but they don't really have to do the work anymore. We do it to ourselves. So it's about us shedding it and releasing it and like shifting. But I, in terms of people finding their magic, I would say a lot of times our work down here and what we need to be doing and coming back to ourselves. So taking ourselves out of the meat grinder is going to we're trying to return back home and coming back home to ourselves. And so that's oftentimes like thinking back to like, when were you your fullest self? When were you the most healed, your most joyful, the most trusting of the world and the universe and you? And most of the times that's a child, because we have all these things happen to us on the way. And so I always say, like, go back and do things that you loved as a child. And like things that brought you joy. And generally that will start opening up ways that you're supposed to be moving down here. Because as kids, we don't have all these layers, all these things. And oftentimes those are things that we're supposed to do in our way of healing our earth or bringing us towards liberation, is things that like brought us joy as kids that we're supposed to find a way to bring forth in a bigger, more collective expansion towards healing. So, yes.
I love that. All beautifully said. And I want to thank all three of you and being so present and sharing these very profound messages that I feel like we all really need to, what's the word I'm looking for? Not instill. What is the word I'm looking for? You know what I'm infuse and what's the word I'm looking for?
Absorb.
Integrate. Absorb.
Integrate.
Integrate. Yes. Mm-hmm. Thank you. See, it became even better when I forgot. I mean, they're all so profound. I want to thank your ancestors as well for just gifting you this magic that you are so generously sharing with the rest of us in the world. And so I just really want to, yeah, it's such an honor. It's beyond an honor actually to sit here with you three today and hear. I have chills right now. All the messages that you shared. And also say hello to Mariah Rose's cat.
Who needs to be involved.
Hi. So cute. Well, thank you all so much.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Yomis, that is a wrap. I hope this episode was expanding for you in some way, shape, or form. Feel free to visit our site at yourownmagic.com or check out my shop, eyesofaspen.com. Connect with the other Your Own Magic listeners. We would love to see more conversations started on the Your Own Magic Facebook group. So with all that being said, thank you so much again for tuning in, and I hope you have a magical rest of your day.
Of the work week is spent communicating, so it's important your team does it well. Enter Grammarly. Grammarly's AI helps teams communicate clearly the first time. It shows you how to make words resonate with your audience, helps with brainstorming, and lets you instantly create and revise drafts in just one click. Join over 70,000 teams and 30 million people who use Grammarly to move work forward. Go to grammarly.com/enterprise to learn more. Grammarly. Enterprise Ready AI.